Welcome to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Good morning to all of you joining us locally by radio and streaming online. Today is Sunday, August 7th, 2016. Thank you for tuning in this morning. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu, and today our guest is Tasha Golden. Tasha Golden is a singer and songwriter for the critically acclaimed band Ellery. Her songs have been heard in major motion pictures, TV, and on the radio. Her writing has been published in various venues, and she blogs for Plowshares Literary Journal. Tasha joins us today to discuss her book, Once You Had Hands, which is a finalist for the Ohio Anna Book Award in Poetry. Tasha Golden joins us remotely today. During this live show, I invite you to call in with your thoughts and comments. You can reach us at 952-946-6205, or you can email us at radio@mnatheist.org. Tasha, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, this is absolutely a treat. I had heard about your book of poetry, Once You Had Hands, through the American Humanist Association. So this is a book that you actually published through Humanist Press, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's talk about the book a little bit. It was published in 2015 by Humanist Press. Can you describe the book for us, please? In your words, what is it about?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, when I first wrote the book, I didn't think that I was writing a book. So I was writing all of these poems over the course of 2 or 3 years. And over time, I started to realize that the subject matter was kind of bringing together many of the poems that I was writing. And a lot of them are kind of excavating my family's history of domestic violence. And I grew up in a very conservative religious environment. So it's kind of making sense of the domestic violence within that narrative and in that context. But then I was also working through a departure from the faith that I was raised in and anger at God and anger at that narrative that I had embraced. And at some point I realized that those two ideas aligned a lot more than I expected. I went back to some poems and realized that I couldn't remember whether that poem was one of the ones that was about God or one of the ones that was about domestic violence. And that was really interesting. So I started to kind of play with that a little bit more and pull together the poems that provided that juxtaposition a bit more.
The book is inscribed For the Girls, very simple. What does that mean, For the Girls? Who are you talking to? Who are you acknowledging here?
There's a simple version and there's a more complex version. I think most simply, I do creative writing workshops with girls who are incarcerated. And there was one particular group of girls that I had worked with a few years ago that were really hesitant to share any of their poems. We usually, at the end of the week, have a closing program and we make a book of their poetry. And they were just terrified to do this, but they were writing these beautiful, wonderful poems. And so I had finally, after lots of struggle, kind of sat down and said, okay, I have a stack of poems that I've been terrified to share with the world too. But if you guys will do this Friday and share your poems at this closing program, I promise you that I'll publish these poems too. And we sort of made a deal about it. And so when this book came together, I felt like I needed to dedicate it to them. So that's sort of the most immediate story. And there's also a sense in which the book is really for myself and my sisters and other young women who grew up in an environment that taught us to see ourselves and our bodies and our femininity and gender in specific ways. So,
describe what you mean when you say that you were raised in a conservative Christian community. That could mean a lot of things. So if you wouldn't mind, can you describe for us what it means to you?
I think, well, the Christianity that my family embraced when I was much younger is different than the version that they now ascribe to, although I can't speak for their faith and I don't share it now, but it bordered on fundamentalism, a lot of very strict ideas of, maybe the easiest way to say it is that a lot of the motivation behind anything that you would do would be fear. A fear that God would be angry at you, a fear that you would go to hell, a fear that you would be punished in some way. And I think that the impact of that in a family environment is that when you embrace as loving a God who is constantly threatening punishment, then it becomes possible to imagine a family that can identify itself as being a loving family and yet also constantly threaten punishment and nurture fear. And I think those two things, came together in my upbringing.
You say community, community, is that extending beyond your immediate family? Is that describing just your church, or was it more formal than that?
I think it extends beyond my family. My father is a preacher, and so it was difficult. It would be difficult to imagine my upbringing or my family without the community that came along with it as a result of our big investment in our church community. So that's a big part of it. And then as I got older, I was very invested in my faith until my 20s. I went to a Christian undergraduate college, and so my experience of Christianity wound up very much extending beyond, you know, like across the nation, people that I would make contact with as a result of having that faith. So some of those people would not embrace probably the thing that I am. Some of those people, I have to say, would not embrace the faith or the narrative that I'm challenging in this book, but many of them, I think, do in at least some ways.
Sure. Now, I was under the impression when I first started reading this book and read some descriptions about the book, I had seen the word Tennessee, and I thought that the books or the poems were describing life in the Tennessee Bible Belt. And you clarified for me that you were actually born in Tennessee, but then raised in your community in Ohio. So how old were you when your family moved from Tennessee to Ohio?
Oh, I wasn't even a year old yet, but the Bible Belt word works definitely for every word that I have lived since then. I think has definitely been very much in the Bible Belt. But it's, I think the fact that I moved from Tennessee at such a young age has always been a pull for me. And my mother is the youngest of 11 children, mm-hmm. but both of her parents passed away very young. And so I don't have much of a connection with anybody on her side. And that's always felt very mysterious to me. And so a lot of these poems were my effort also to kind of either recall stories that I had heard or create them where I felt that they were missing for my life as far as my genealogy and my family background from East Tennessee that I missed out on actually having a lived experience with.
So I'm trying to think of how to phrase it. I want to explore that connection a little bit more. What role did Tennessee have on you and your growing up and your writing? Was it just the fact that that family history was missing, or are there internal conceptions? You have these ideas of what it means to be from Tennessee, and maybe that influenced your parents. I don't want to feed you lines, sorry. But I'm trying to understand that more because the book does bring up Tennessee quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that my ideas, I have a couple levels of that. We would travel back and forth to Tennessee to see family sometimes, not very often, and that was only family on my mom's side. My father had been there when I was born for a preaching job, actually, at a church there. So he wasn't from there either. But all of the stories of my mom's upbringing have always been kind of haunting. She was orphaned at a young age and then scattered from all of her siblings and kind of ripped from East Tennessee, which is all that she knew at like 3 or 4 years old, and taken to Florida and raised with ultimately by a woman who made it very clear that she hadn't wanted my mom at all and was abusive and very scary. And so there's a way that a lot of what subsequently happened in my mom's life and in my life feel traced to this moment where she was extracted pretty, it seems, violently from a place that could have been nurturing. But ultimately also that space in East Tennessee was, had its own very grave difficulties with poverty that their mm-hmm. family had experienced and with alcoholism. So it's a very confusing, I think a lot of the poems are trying to make sense of what if my mom could have had this family environment? What if she hadn't been ripped out of that? But then also that would have been perhaps equally difficult for her. And so I'm trying to, I think, tie pieces together to create a narrative that that ultimately can't make sense. But that's kind of the beauty of poetry, is sort of wrestling with it.
Sure. I wanted to discuss with you that intersection, that influence of religion on domestic violence, and what it was in your community that made domestic violence more common, more, I don't want to say accepted, that made it more prevalent or more part of your community. or your family? What is it? What was it about the religion that allowed for domestic violence to be part of your experience?
I will say that this is something that I maybe pieced together as a process of writing this book and thinking through things. I had written a song several years ago about my mother's experience of domestic violence. My husband's mother had a similar experience, and I'd written a song for them as part of my band, Ellery. And it wasn't a song that we thought that we would share with people, but once we did, it became the song everybody wanted to talk about. And I had women and men all over the country and any place that we performed music, even in China, come up after shows and want to talk about that song and want to talk about the violence in their own lives. And I started to realize that something that had felt very anomalous and crazy from my own upbringing or my own family was actually much more common than I would have ever wanted to imagine. And we, as a result of that, became pretty invested as a band, and I as a musician and songwriter, in efforts to raise awareness about domestic violence. But then at some point in writing this book, I became much more aware of how prevalent it had been even in my own personal history and in my family in ways that I hadn't even recognized.
And Tasha, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have to go to break. Can we pick this up after the break?
Absolutely.
Thank you. For everyone listening, Tasha Golden is our guest today. Please stay with us through the break and we'll return to Atheist Talk. You're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Make Sunday afternoons your go-to place to hear about progressive issues from a woman's perspective. Coming up this week, National Delegate Michael Arulfo will tell us his stories about what it was like to be in the room when history was made at the Democratic National Convention. Listen to A Woman's Place, Sundays from 2 to 3 p.m., where conversation ignites change. And remember, you can always pick up our podcast at am950radio.com.
We humans arrive on our planet knowing nothing. In our first 2 years, we learn how to clothe and feed ourselves, as well as the basics of communication. Humanists know that knowledge of our world is derived by observation, experimentation, and rational analysis. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems. Find our meetup group, meeting topics, book clubs, newsletters, and other activities at our website, humanistsofmn.org. Like us on Facebook or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours and ours alone.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe, and I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and Francine Dinah. If you've never been to Cucumbers, it's a buffet-style restaurant with a huge variety of salads, homemade soups, bakery items, and hot entrees that change daily and nightly, plus our always fresh fruit and delicious ice cream. We're open for lunch and dinner, but Sunday brunch is my favorite time at Cucumbers, with scrambled eggs, waffles, French toast, bacon, sausage, baked ham, chicken fajitas, brunch potatoes, warm gooey cinnamon rolls, and many other items to choose from. It's no wonder why Cucumbers has always been a popular Sunday destination. So whether you're looking to skip Mass, someplace to go after Mass, or just great food to maintain your Mass, Cucumbers is the answer to your prayers. Bring in your church bulletin or Minnesota Atheist newsletter and receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
There are those that say that the recent severe storms are God's judgment. There are those that say humans are causing climate change. Humanists know that knowledge of our world comes from observation, experimentation, and rational analysis, not from reading horoscopes or old writings. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems. Find meeting times and locations and more at humanistsofmn.org. Like us at Facebook, too, or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours and ours alone.
Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu, and I am speaking with Tasha Golden. She's a singer-songwriter and author, and she's here today to discuss with us her book, Once You Had Hands. We are taking questions and comments for Tasha on the topic of today's show, so please feel free to give us a call at 952-946-6205. We'd love to hear from you. You can also email us if you prefer that. So we're at radio@mnatheist.org. So, Tasha, Meryl Miller is your communications associate over at Humanist Press. And I just want to read a section from the letter that he sent when I approached him about having you on the show. Golden's poems raise evocative questions about the nature of religion and its domineering relationships to those who follow it. The book's final poem, Once You Had Hands, keenly articulates the loss and relief felt in leaving religion. Your book is somewhat a journey. You start out very much an angry at God kind of atheist, I think, right? Oh, is atheist a term that you apply to yourself?
Sure. I don't like any of the labels because they've been the ones that I had being raised felt difficult to embrace and to shed. But sure, I mean, I think that ultimately it works.
non-believer, maybe.
Yeah, that's good.
Sure. before the break, we had just started to talk about the relationship between the religious experience that you had growing up and domestic violence. And we're very much aware of the fact that women get the short end of the stick in most major religions, even religions that claim to be very inclusive. The doctrines and the ideologies of so many of our religions find some way to put women at a disadvantage. What were some of the things that you had growing up that influenced you, that manifested?
Sure. I think an obvious one was my father was a preacher, but women weren't allowed to preach or to when I was very young, women couldn't even do things like lead songs in the church and things like that. We could sing what they called special music. Some of your listeners might be aware of things like special music in church services. And so in a big way, I think that influenced me as a songwriter because I could write a song that said what I wanted to say. And because I had an in, because my dad was a preacher, I would often be allowed to sing it on Sunday mornings. And in a way that became my way to preach my own in my own kind of way. And I think that really motivated me as a writer and a songwriter to have that was my way of speaking. So that's one fundamental way. But I think overall, there was definitely a sense that women weren't as reliable. Women couldn't be leaders over men. Women couldn't teach men. And so there was this sense that women's intellect wasn't up to the task and that women were dangerous because of being perhaps sexually tempting or tempters, and that if a man, for instance, this is still very common, but if a man was attracted to a woman, that was the woman's fault for being attractive, right, as opposed to the man's fault for, it's not even a fault to be attracted, but, you know, the idea of lust in the church is very significant. So a sense that we had to silence ourselves and very much hide any sense of our own bodies or sexualities, that was very strong.
I asked you before the interview if you would pick out a few poems that you thought might be of interest to our audience and that spoke to you. Did you have a chance to do that?
Yeah, there's, I thought about, for at least the first one, there's a poem called The Girls, and you had mentioned the inscription at the beginning of the book. So this is not, this poem kind of combines all of those women maybe into one, but this is called The Girls. Their lips were blooming, purple tongues and specks along their cheeks, and on their narrow shoulders, propped on stacks of ribs and tiny breasts, they smelled of cherries and detergent, smoothed their skirts over their knees. But when it came to Bibles, deacons, pews, apostles, priests, oh God, the girls were flesh and curve, all woman, eagerness and fever, fingers dexterous, mouths lit up and practiced ovals. When it came to altars, parables, to shame and ash, the girls knew what to do with them, with thick and throbbing despotism, curtsy psalm and penitent admission of their sins. The girls were solemn, shy contrition, tender on their tongues, wore out their jaws and knees, imagining their bodies body, hot unholy wolves in cotton rags. The girls, so they were told, each had a gaping, God-shaped hole that God would fill if they believed he'd make them pure, body and soul. And so the girls lay white and wide awake at night, a damp, uncertain ache, their thighs clamped, trembling shut, afraid he might just come or not, afraid he'd rise engorged from ancient graves and find his foolish virgin shake and climb their bones and branches, break his silence with a kiss. But it would never come to this, that God, that hole, did not exist.
Thank you. There's so much in here. Where should we start on this?
Maybe this one pulls a lot of the sexuality that in my experience, at least, the Christian church didn't talk very much about the ways that a relationship with Jesus or with God gets very sexualized. And I think this poem pulls a lot of that into the picture and maybe reveals that it can be very dangerous, the openness that you're supposed to have to the Christ or to this relationship. There's a lot of sexual language there that winds up confusing where the border of my body is, what I'm supposed to tolerate or allow from another being or person, what I can say no to. Yeah.
When I first read this poem, it came to mind very much a scene from, I don't know if you have read the book by Margaret Atwood. And it's escaping me right now. It was her most famous book about the dystopian.
Oh, The Handmaid's Tale?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Very much came to me because it seems like in these overly oppressive religious structures, women might seem unsure of what they're supposed to do or be. But when they get into religion, their church, and their defined roles, they just can perform. And
yeah.
that struck me quite a bit. And the part about the third stanza here where you're talking about the women eager and feverish and they know how they're supposed to behave and perform for everyone else who's watching in that venue, but maybe don't have so much of a role or guidance outside of that life.
Yeah, and I think knowing how you're supposed to perform, both in a public setting, but also in your personal experience, like for myself, like if you think of just a woman by herself in her home, if she has been raised to believe that this is a particular kind of relationship she's supposed to have, that it would be shameful to not have that relationship with God, that that's the relationship that validates her as a being, then all of that idea of who owns me, who speaks through me, when am I silent, when am I loud, all of that follows you back home, so that it's beyond a public performance and a very much self-inflicted silencing and self-inflicted fever that you have for very particular things that you've been taught are okay to be excited about, in a way that tamps down perhaps the more dangerous things like lust or sexuality or just excitement for anything else.
Sure. We have to go to break again, but we'll come back and let's go through another one of your poems after the break. Okay, Tasha?
Right. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a break, listeners. Please stay with us. We'll return to Atheist Talk with my guest, Tasha Golden. I'm Brianne Villier. You're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Do yourself a favor and check out the amazing cuisine of eatlocalminnesota.com. More than just a website, eatlocalminnesota.com provides you with the best local and independently owned restaurants in the Twin Cities. With breathtaking views of the Mississippi River, the Nicollet Island Inn features the comfort of the countryside right in the heart of Minneapolis. Perfect for weddings, seminars, or a romantic night out, the tasteful merger of classic decor with modern amenities will make your next event unforgettable. Call 612-331-1800 or visit nicolletislandinn.com. Serving family favorites in Minneapolis since 1964, Milda's Cafe is a great spot for breakfast or lunch. Wake up with their delicious Eggs Benedict or biscuits and gravy and savor their many great lunch options. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, Milda serves authentic Finnish pasties. Open weekdays 6 to 3 and now on weekends 8 to 2 on Glenwood Avenue, 4 blocks east of Penn.
We humans arrive on our planet knowing nothing. In our first 2 years, we learn how to clothe and feed ourselves, as well as the basics of communication. Humanists know that knowledge of our world is derived by observation, experimentation, and rational analysis. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems. Find our meetup group, meeting topics, book clubs, newsletters, and other activities at our website, humanistsofmn.org. Like us on Facebook or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours and ours alone.
Atheists, secular humanists, and free thinkers. Here you are listening to the Minnesota Atheists Talk Radio Show, Atheist Talk. We hope you are enjoying it. If having a frankly atheist perspective on the radio waves appeals to you, please consider making a contribution to our radio fund. Our contract came up for renewal, and we need your help if you want the program to stay on the air. That will make sure that you can continue to have opportunities to hear interesting speakers with non-religious perspectives, and you can call up and ask them questions too. Get the details on our website at minnesotaatheists.org, where you will find buttons to make it easy to make a secure donation through PayPal. Or, if you have a business and would like to reach an intelligent, progressive audience, please contact us through our website. That's minnesotaatheists.org. Or call us at 612-588-7031. If you are interested in us, we are interested in you.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Peter Lee. Partly cloudy today with highs in the lower 80s, light and variable winds, becoming east around 5 miles an hour in the afternoon. Mostly clear tonight with lows in the lower 60s. A partly cloudy Monday with highs near 80, and Monday night mostly clear in the evening, then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight. Situated by Moore Lake on Highway 65, Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is one of the most beautiful destination fine dining restaurants in the Twin Cities. Happy hour food and drink specials and a Sunday brunch, 6161 Highway 65. More information at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I'm your host, Brianne Bilyeu. Before we return to our guest, Tasha Golden, we have just a few announcements. First, thank you to member Brent Michael Davids for composing the music that we use here on Atheist Talk. The radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous donations of our listeners. Any donation, great or small, helps keep Atheist Talk on the air and in podcast. Minnesota Atheist is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. If you're able to help with a donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page. We couldn't do the show without you, and we deeply appreciate your support. I'd like to give a little bit of a shout-out to Nancy and George and all the others from the 5th Sunday Flying Spaghetti Monster Dinner. We love that you guys are still doing that. We love that you have such a long, rich history. Thank you so much for pulling that together for us. We do have a couple sponsors that I want to mention. We're produced with funding from Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, American Atheists, and Cucumber's Restaurant in Edina, Minnesota. Please consider visiting our sponsors, and if you do, let them know that you appreciate their support of Atheist Talk. If you'd like to advertise on this program, please contact us at radio@mnatheist.org. Today, after the show, I'll be heading over to Cucumber's Restaurant for the monthly Fans of Atheist Talk Radio brunch. Come on over at 10:30 to enjoy some delicious food and ungodly conversation. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to Tasha Golden. Hi, Tasha.
Hi.
So you have another poem picked out for us.
I do. This is a poem that has an epigraph at the beginning, so like when you see a little quote at the beginning of a poem. The poem is called Worm, and the epigraph is from Job, which I always like to say is one of the happier sections. Anyway, the quote is, "If even the moon does not shine and the stars are not pure in his sight, how much less man who is a maggot and a son of man who is a worm?" Ah, I believed it, groaned and waited, knelt and hated, passion, skin, my breasts and limbs, my lungs too small and weak to breathe the thin air at your feet, which were wriggling, incomplete, all bruised and swollen. I learned your verses, hymns, until they mildewed, blurred, grew brittle, thin, until I wept for what we both knew wasn't coming in the end, your horse and choir, earth agape and heaven rushing in. So I covered me in ashes, rolled the centuries behind me, swallowed lust and songs like sugar, packed the meat on, sold my soul. There were ghosts of you in dresses, books, and lampshades. Every cold, unbuttoned bastard bore your name, undressed himself, mining for gold. You're still here in the dust, disease, the wish to peel the skin from me, to wash me down to bones and teeth, if doing so could make me clean. I still trust nothing less than me. What's left of you is just that keen and yet unmatched facility with which you search a soul and see a worm.
So I get quite a bit of desperation in this poem. What was going on when you were writing this?
I think it's a sense of what remains after, I think if you've been psychologically and otherwise built to trust yourself less than anything and built to agree with the notion that you are worthless and maybe what's the easiest way to say it, we were joking the other day that like in the Christian narrative, like you are so disgusting and terrible and sinful that God can't even look at you without the sacrifice of his son Jesus. And so if that is like really brought home day after day, week after week for your entire upbringing, then what you leave that with is a sense that I'm worthless, I'm terrible, I'm ashamed to anybody who looks at me. Somebody has to die in order for me to be a legitimate being that can be in a relationship with somebody else. You know, that's really the narrative. And so even when you leave that narrative and even when you extract yourself from that, there's still, you can't get rid of that sense. That's what is left of it is that, that sense that you could look at a human being and see a worm, you know, that's what you've been taught to see.
And a bit of a journey here too, right? The early on the fervent belief and then the doubt and then the disillusion, but still leaving that angry at God feeling at the end, maybe not quite having been able to leave those thoughts behind, but definitely strong doubt by the end of it, right?
Yeah, well, I think for me personally, that's all behind, but I think the book leaves a kind of swings
sure.
a lot
yes.
in that.
Sorry, yeah, I did mean within the poem, not your current state.
Yeah. That poem and I think the book as a whole sort of like swims around in that, like the anger and the difficulty of moving past something that ultimately you were very much in these very formative years of your life taught to embrace.
How did your journey get you to the point of no longer believing?
That was really difficult. I think probably anybody can relate to this, but if you have built your entire identity and life and even career around a certain belief system and that belief system gets challenged, you have a lot of reasons to ignore, deny, mm-hmm. Push away. It's like you want to take whatever pill it is in the matrix to go back. And so it was very hard. There was a lot of, I had plenty of things in my life drawing me back to that faith and that community, the ability to feel at home someplace. I didn't know where you go after you leave that. So, but I think ultimately I've always been a questioner. And we were just saying to friends last night, they were kind of talking about their kids always being like, why can't I do this? I need the why. And I was like, oh, that was me always growing up. Like I drove my parents crazy asking them. Why I could, that when they said, because I said so, it made me, I couldn't have been angrier. So, I think that ultimately that idea in the Bible, because I said so, started to feel just as shaky as it should. And ultimately I couldn't ignore my own intellectual questions. And when there was nothing at the bottom of something, I just had to say, okay, there's nothing at the bottom of this. If I follow whatever to its logical conclusion, I wind up in some abyss. So this isn't, I can't trust this anymore. So.
And was that, I know for me, I was raised in a very liberal church, but it still took me years to be able to leave those beliefs behind. I'm guessing it was a long journey for you also, or was there a moment when you were like, nope, done?
Oh, it kind of, looking back, it kind of feels like a moment. I remember crafting an email to one of my mentors, who's still one of the most important people in my life, I think, and telling him, like, I don't think that I believe this anymore. Don't really know what to do. And crafting that confession, like, it felt like a confession at the time, but sort of like putting it into words and made it real. And I think that from that time that I hit send on that email, I've not been able to get back to it. It's sort of like that solidified something for me that I think I tried, and I tried some other religions too. I tried to get myself to replace this, because I wasn't sure at first, like, whether it was what I knew what I didn't believe. I didn't know what I did believe. And so there was a long time of trying to seek that out. But so I think both. I think there was a moment, and then there was also a journey.
So I hear that a lot, that we search for things that can replace that, what we don't believe anymore. Lots of friends who are ex-pagans.
Yeah.
How did your relationship with Humanist Press come about?
Oh, that's interesting. I had this book of poems. And in hindsight now, it doesn't seem as crazy of a collection as it definitely felt to me at the time. Because, I mean, as you can imagine, when you put a book out that has these very personal poems in it, then you kind of, you're like, oh, people are going to read these. Oh no. I thought that at the time that these poems were unbelievably crazy, and that people wouldn't be able to get it. And so I had sent the manuscript to a few poetry presses, and then I was like, yeah, but I want to seek out, like, where could this the story of this book really maybe hit home. And so I did some brainstorming, and by the time I actually contacted Humanist Press, I kind of was thinking, I had shared the poems with enough people to realize that these had a broad audience, but I also still believed that maybe the particular audience of Humanist Press would be people who either could relate to the journey that a lot of the poems were describing, or could certainly understand it or imagine it given where they are now. So I contacted Humanist Press, and they hadn't really done much poetry, so they were interested in adding more arts to the conversation around humanism. And so that became a really great fit. But it was kind of me reaching out to say, like, who might see what this journey is and is trying to represent and speak to, like, the silence that these poems are trying to challenge. So
were you, or are you, a member of any humanist groups in Ohio? Did that play into it at all? Have you found a community that's, that you are part of now, that you consider yourself a part of, in the way of humanism or having left religion or anything like that?
That's a great question, and not specifically a humanist community, although I am a PhD student studying in public health, and that's a really great, academia is a really great environment to find people who even if they don't precisely share your outlook on the world, are unbelievably open to conversation and to questions and to digging in. And so that has been a real, I would have never imagined myself, like, 10 years ago back in academia or doing what I'm doing now, but it has been a really great fit for, I think, my situation and my questions, and for finding a community of people who are also asking questions.
Well, we have reached the portion of this show where I want you to have some time to tell us all about what you're doing now. Where can people find your stuff? Where are you going to be? Promo time.
That's lovely. Thank you. Well, there's all kinds of information at my website. It's just tashagolden.com. And there's all kinds of information there about the various things that I'm doing. So my history is as a singer-songwriter, and we are recording more music right now. So we're hoping that that's available soon. So there will be an update about that music on my personal site. You can also find it at facebook.com/ellerymusic and access to all kinds of music there, or on Spotify or Pandora or Amazon, iTunes. But then right now I'm a PhD student in public health and doing a lot of work trying to establish how the arts affect communities and community health. And that comes from, I was talking a little bit earlier about how people had approached me to tell me their own stories of domestic violence after hearing a song about it at a show. And I started to wonder, like, oh, what is happening? What is the drive behind this? And I became interested in how that might, if there are things that are stigmatized, whether that is domestic violence or mental health or even atheism that has a stigma behind it. If there are things that people want to talk about and yet they can't, how does that affect health? And how could the arts provide an outlet for people to make things more like talkaboutable? So that's what I'm studying with my doctoral work. And I do creative writing workshops with young women in jail and with other youth and people. So some of that is also, you can find information about that on my site as well.
Wonderful. Well, that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much for joining us today, Tasha.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning into Atheist Talk. I know it seems a bit early to be signing off, but I promise that's for a good and exciting reason. This week, I'm happy to announce the beginning of a sponsorship from American Atheist. For the next several weeks, American Atheist will be producing the last segment of our show, bringing you thoughts and voices from the atheist communities in the form of a pre-recorded segment that they're calling American Atheist Viewpoint. This week's segment features Dave Silverman, president of American Atheist, and Nick Fish, national program director for American Atheist. Thanks again for listening to this week's interview with Tasha Golden. I hope you enjoy American Atheist Viewpoint coming up after this commercial break.
Great music, great stories, great conversation, and emotions come their way out of your radio speakers on the Wall of Power Radio Hour. Hi, this is Brian Turner from my good friend, singer, songwriter, and pal, Paul Metza. You get it all right here with two broadcasts, Saturday evenings at 6 with a repeat broadcast Sunday at noon. It's the Wall of Power Radio Hour with Paul Metza right here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Make the connection. I'm Lori Fitz, host of Connections Radio Show, talking about ideas that matter. Join me and my guests as we reflect on a wide range of topics that challenge us to see ourselves, our community, and the world around us in ways that get us thinking, connected, and perhaps inspired or challenged to do just a bit more because we made the connection. Be a part of our conversation, Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe. I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and France in Edina. Many who have dined at Cucumbers are of the opinion that our buffet has evolved from an older, more country-style buffet. They look at our 50-foot salad bar and can imagine a smaller ancestor with far fewer choices. An ancestor that didn't offer as many hot selections or have a bakery with fresh baked muffins and breads. Didn't offer homemade soups and lacked the fresh fruit and ice cream bar that Cucumbers customers have grown to love. But some will say, where are the transitional buffets? In addition, they look at everything that we offer and say that Cucumbers is irreducibly complex. If you were to move just one of our offerings, the entire buffet wouldn't function. Well, I would like to think that Cucumbers was intelligently designed, since I helped design it. But at the same time, it truly is an evolutionary step up the buffet ladder. And as always, if you bring in your atheist newsletter or church bulletin, you will receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
I've never met another atheist.
Sure you have. Non-believers make up 12% of the population.
Then where are they?
You can meet us at book clubs, pub crawls, discussion groups, movie nights, monthly meetings.
Okay, I get it. How am I going to keep track of all this?
Easy. Sign up for Minnesota Atheist Meetup Group and subscribe to AWE.
What's a meetup group?
Meetup is an online networking site that helps people build communities. We have over 700 members with at least two events every week.
And what is AWE?
It stands for Atheist Weekly Email. It comes out every Friday and lists everything that's going on.
How do I sign up?
Go to the Minnesota Atheists website, minnesotaatheists.org. On the left, click on the words Get Awe-Inspired.
And for the meetup?
Look for the red meetup badge on the right. Above it are the words, click here to check out the meetup group.
I'm sold. Minnesota Atheist, Meetup, and AWE. What's that website again?
MinnesotaAtheists.org.
Welcome to American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, August 7th, 2016. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and I'm joined this week by David Silverman, President of American Atheists. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing very well, Nick. How are you today?
I'm great. So let's talk politics, Dave. The Democratic National Convention and the Republican National Convention have been the last couple of weeks here. First thing I think we should talk about has got to be the leaked emails from the Democratic National Committee talking about potentially using Senator Bernie Sanders' alleged atheism against him. We just got news this week that the chief financial officer of the Democratic National Committee, Brad Marshall, who was the one who proposed this, has resigned along with the CEO and director of communications for the Democratic National Committee. So what do you think it says about the Democrats that this is something that's even being considered?
Well, there's two messages here. First of all, we have to understand that the prejudice and the bigotry against atheists is still prevalent, even on the Democratic side. It's still there, and it's still knee-jerk. It's still something that people do as a default. But the thing that I'm really encouraged about, you know, because of the Atheist Voter Program and because of all of the atheist activism that we've been doing, we've been trying to bring atheism into the political discussion. And what we've seen here, I'm beside myself. I'm very thrilled the fact that Marshall is gone, that the DNC cared enough about the atheist vote to do something about it. I called for his resignation. I called for his firing, but we got his resignation, and that's fine. But I think it's both discouraging and encouraging. Discouraging because this happened in the first place, but encouraging because it really actually looks like, they won't say it overtly, but it really actually looks like the Democrats care about the atheist vote. And this is something that I'm really, really happy about, and it's something that wouldn't have happened even 4 or 8 years ago.
Yeah, I think the most important thing to sort of take away from this is that it wasn't just the atheist groups who were calling him out on this, calling this a problem. You know, we put out obviously an open letter talking about this. I saw a couple of other groups also call for his resignation. So, you know, that's to be expected. But on top of that, we had groups that had nothing to do with atheism raising this as a huge issue. I mean, even on Fox News, we saw Fox News contributors saying, so what if he is an atheist? Why does it matter? Why should it matter? You know, one of the hosts coming out and defending atheists from attack on this. So it really speaks to the amount of progress that's been made in a very short time. I will say that, you know, one of the problems that we're seeing or that we've that came out on this is that neither Senator Sanders nor Secretary Clinton in rebuking that language that came out from this email, neither of them said, but so what if he's an atheist? That speaks to a problem that we still haven't addressed and that we need to make progress on. So despite the fact that everyone who looked at this said, wow, that's a really terrible thing to say and a really disgusting use of someone's religion or their perceived religion or lack of religion, that's a disgusting use of that. Nobody came out and said, well, so what? So,
and it's discouraging because there's a big mountain of prejudice that we have to cover here, that we have to overcome, and we see it because of that very thing, because nobody said the obvious thing. And it's important to add on to what you just said, that saying, well, so what if he's an atheist, is an obvious response to this. And so we have to say, we have to assume that they said, well, should we say this, and somebody else said no. So we have to assume that, and that means that we have to look at the bigotry in the DNC and see it for what it is. It's getting better, but it's certainly not all gone yet. We have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Which isn't to say, by the way, that, you know, this is exclusively a Democratic problem.
Oh, no.
I think we know, or we saw plenty of things on display at the Republican National Convention now 2 weeks ago that give us pause. A lot of people, a lot of atheists even have said, you know, well, Donald Trump isn't that bad because at least he's not a theocrat. The problem with that is he's overtly attempting to reach out to a really far extreme version of evangelicals for his presidential campaign. He went so far, I think the big news out of the convention, at least on our side of things, is he said that he would repeal the Johnson Amendment, which is the prohibition on churches politicking from the pulpit. Now, he didn't say anything about other 501c3 nonprofits, but even if he did, the problem is there's how many hundreds of thousands of churches in the country that are currently allegedly banned from politicking. This would open
the floodgates. Allegedly.
Yeah, absolutely. This would open the floodgates to just a level of political involvement from churches that we haven't seen in this country in, you know, ever. So what do you think about that? Is that just a totally transparent attempt to win votes? Or, I mean, what do you think?
Well, I don't think Trump understands the concept. I don't think Trump understands why it's a problem. I think Trump is just saying what he needs to say to get votes. And I don't think he understands the ramifications. I don't think he understands the reasoning behind the Johnson Amendment. And I don't think he understands that it would open the door to every non-religious, to every nonprofit organization to do that too. Nonprofit organizations are de facto extensions of the government. You don't pay taxes on them. You get tax deductions when you give to them because they're de facto extensions of the government. They're supposedly providing a service that the government isn't providing. So these nonprofit organizations aren't supposed to politic because they're extensions, de facto extensions of the government. And when you take that away, you've got sections of the government politicking.
Yeah.
And that's a very dangerous thing to do.
Right. And, you know, and what it boils down to is you have the government, you have my tax dollars underwriting, you know, people's political opinions. And that's not what we do. The other thing that I think is, you know, really dangerous from this, even if it extended to all, nonprofit organizations, even if they said, okay, American Atheists, you know, you're a 501c3 tax exempt nonprofit organization, go ahead and politic just like the churches. The problem is we still have to prove our usefulness. We still have to file all those forms. Churches don't. And, you know, add that to the fact that we're not going around telling people, hey, listen to us and do exactly what we say or you're going to be subjected to eternal damnation. We say, hey, wouldn't it be great if we had a secular government and atheists had full equality? We don't go around threatening you. Churches have huge amounts of power beyond just their tax exempt status.
But, I mean, think about the other side of it, though. If you've got super PACs plus churches that are tax-exempt plus churches that don't politic or can politic but they don't file their forms, you've got a huge potential for money laundering. You've got a huge potential for fraud. You've got a huge potential for super PACs just funneling money into churches to spread their specific message. You've got a huge potential to make churches a part of the political machine via money and super PACs.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely something we need to keep an eye on, definitely something we need to speak out against very forcefully. But we'll save that for another time. Thank you so much for listening to the American Atheist Viewpoint this week. For more information about American Atheists, including how to become a member, go ahead and visit www.atheists.org. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.